Petersfield's Shine Radio.
I'm Noni Needs, this is Petersfield Shine Radio, and today I am talking to artist and photographer Nick Brandt, who has an exhibition of a series of portraits symbolising the devastating effect of climate change on our planet. Newlands House Gallery is in Petworth, and his exhibition simultaneously opened in Paris, France and England back in February. The exhibition runs until the 29th of May, and it's amazing that he's here. The work is fabulous, and we're going to talk about his work, why he does this work and what he hopes to achieve. So without further ado, I'm going to say, hello, Nick, how are you today?
Hello, Noni. I'm fine. I'm actually talking to you from California, where I live.
So we're on a bit of a time difference here. So is it morning where you are?
Yes. And it's kind of English rain. So
oh, really?
Appropriately for this interview.
Well, I can tell you that this morning I went out for a dog walk and it was cold. And then we've had hail that has covered everything. And now we have clear blue skies and it's 4 degrees outside, having been 16.
And this is why I live in California.
This is why you're talking about the effects of what we do as people on climate change.
Oh, what a segue, Noni. What a segue. What a segue, Noni. Although I don't really think that's got necessarily anything to do with climate change, but, you know, because we have to be, listen, we have to be careful to not ascribe every unusual weather incident to climate change. Otherwise, skeptics slash deniers can jump on us as being unscientific, when, of course, I say, all the scientific evidence irrefutably points towards global escalating climate change.
I was being flippant and I apologise. Okay, we'll leave that one there. Let's talk about your work. Because that's a separate podcast,
which is inextricably, okay? Of course, inextricably interconnected, because the work is created because of this, for me, most consequential issue ever facing the planet and humankind. And environment and politics do get connected because there are people who don't believe in it. The science, as there are people who don't believe in the science of evolution, etc.
Coming back to your work, I went to the coming back to your work. I went to the opening of the private view the day before it opened to the public. So, when you walk in, the Newlands House Gallery is in Petworth. It's a four-story Georgian house, and it's been renovated to do single exhibitions of whatever work they want. It's a real privilege to be in that space. It's a gorgeous space to be in. So when you, that's just to give people, I'm urging people to go to Newlands House Gallery because I think it's amazing the work they put on. But when I arrived at your work, which you were not at because you were somewhere in Jordan shooting for your next lot of work, it's just the scale of it is what is arresting, the photographic scale, and that, and it's overwhelming. And then you start looking at what it is you are talking about. So just to give listeners an idea, you have to see it in person. That's the important thing about this work. And that's something that you prescribe to. So talk to me about that.
So increasingly in this day and age, people view work not just on computers, but on phones. And the diminishment of emotional impact looking at a work, a piece of work, any piece of visual work on that scale, it's honestly pretty depressing. Because I take photographs to make prints, where when you are, yes, as you've described, and thank you for those compliments, when you're standing in front of an image that is 2 meters high and you see all the details of people's and the animals' expressions, it is so much more emotionally impactful than just some squiggly little shapes 2 inches wide on a phone. one of the greatest compliments for me is to see people moved to tears looking at the work. But I have only ever seen that when people are standing in front of these large prints, not looking on their phones. So that emotional impact. And the Newlands House Gallery exhibition is the first exhibition in the world where it's all three of the released chapters, because chapter three of The Day May Break, this global series, chapter three, photographed underwater in Fiji, was only released a few months ago, and Newlands House is the first exhibition in the world to actually, as I say, exhibit all three chapters of this global series, The Day May Break.
It's very difficult to explain photographic work and do this by audio, but we're going to give it our best shot. So the Day May Break chapters, is it 1 to 3?
And 4 now, shot in Jordan.
Kenya. So there are animals photographed, people and animal portraits photographed in Bolivia, Kenya and Zimbabwe. And then there's a separate body of work, Sink Rise, that is filmed in Fiji, photographed in Fiji. So the first body of work and the work that is on the ground floor as you come in are portraits of safari animals, or animals that we don't see in this country, elephant, puma, sloths, bears, photographed with people and the impact of that. So talk to me about the themes and why you've put these photographs together. And I don't want to diminish the impact it had on me, but it talks of so many things about destruction of climate and the population. And you see a human sitting very calmly and a puma behind, and the impact of that is, what is going on? So there are many questions. You provoke many questions in the mind of the viewer.
So the animals are all rescued animals living in sanctuaries and conservancies in the three countries that are there because of habitat destruction, poaching, wildlife trafficking, and they are mostly habituated to humans. So then the people have all been carefully chosen from around each country, and they are people who have been dramatically impacted by the effects of climate change, to the point that some are climate change refugees.
What does that mean?
That means they've had to abandon their homes, their land, their livelihood, as a result of years of extended drought, as a result of climate change intensified cyclones, and basically pack up what little they have, if anything remains, and go and find a new life somewhere else. So those people were all very carefully chosen in preceding weeks of the shoot.
And by yourself? Yes.
And then they travel. We bring them to these various sanctuaries and conservancies where the rescued animals are, and I photograph them together in the same frame, no Photoshop, etc. And what I'm trying to convey in the photographs is a kind of shared sense of loss for both the humans and the animals. I consider animals sentient creatures, not so different from us. So I'm looking for moments where you feel a kind of, as I said, not just a shared sense of loss, but a similar emotion in both the human and the animal within that, in that moment, so that you, the viewer, can hopefully get a better, not a better, but be more aware and enlightened and engaged in a dialogue about what is happening around the world. And specifically, all these photographs are taken in countries that are the least responsible for the impacts of climate change. In other words, those countries have amongst the lowest carbon emissions, unlike UK, America, Australia, Canada, etc. And they are the most vulnerable. They don't have a social safety net. When their lives are impacted by climate change, that's it. They're on their own. the difference in Fiji, the underwater photographs in Fiji, is that is kind of pre-apocalyptic, in that those people are living by the coast and are representative of the people whose lives will be dramatically impacted as sea levels rise over the coming decades and they have to move to higher ground.
So the photographs of the people in Fiji are very powerful, and you've shot them underwater. What I'd like to know is, I've done some diving, but how do you manage to shoot underwater with all your portraits being so calm? They are in the moment, underwater, and, you know, you can see all the bubbles around their faces, you know, how bubbles, air bubbles cling to your face when you're underwater. And they are, you know, they are in the emotion of whatever they're feeling. It terrifies me being underwater, and they are so calm as if that's where they live, they're water people. So tell me about how you managed to achieve all of that.
So, first of all those people live by the ocean, and they've kind of grown up free diving, meaning they dive without masks and, well, they dive without snorkels. They just hold their breath and go down. So they're already very comfortable in the water, but what they've not been used to is using scuba regulators. I probably auditioned up to 200 local people, looking for people who, when they held their breath underwater and opened their eyes and appeared to be just having their portrait taken, just as if it's on land, out of those 200, probably about 20, the ones you see in the photographs, were relaxed enough to just look completely normal.
Yeah, that's the powerful thing about that set of photographs. They just look normal, hanging out on sofas, you know, as if they're in the kitchen with a chair, sitting on a table, and they just blow you away because you're like, whoa, that's not normal.
And to answer your kind of question that I didn't really answer from before, it was complicated weighting everybody down so that I hadn't factored in tidal surge. So that, you know, as we're photographing, we're all swaying like leaves in the wind.
Of course.
And so there was a lot of concealed weighting involved to enable us to take what appears to be photographs of such moments of serenity.
They are very serene. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know from my own diving experience that I have a tendency to float to the top because I take in so much air because I am so anxious. But, you know, so to manage to weight those people down, you know, be waiting for everybody to be synchronized in a moment and for you to be ready with your photographic equipment, I think that's an amazing achievement. I don't know. How long did these photographs take?
So, you know, they take out their scuba regulators, hand it off to a safety dive master. And then I've got anything from 30 to 60 seconds to get the photograph before they reach out to get the regulator back because they need some more air. Yeah, exactly.
Because they can't breathe otherwise because we're humans, not water people.
Yeah.
Amazing. And how about the practicalities of putting the Day May Break work together and using, you know, wild animals with humans in the same space?
The animals are so habituated, whether it's a rhino, an elephant or whatever, that honestly, you could just go up and pat them on the chest.
Wow, that
wasn't hard. In the case of the puma and jaguar in Bolivia, I actually had to build a giant sheet of glass between the subject, the human subject, and the animal so that they could be photographed within half a meter of each other and have to wait days while the puma or the jaguar or whatever become relaxed enough to come right up to the glass. Any sort of marginally less insane photographer would just do it in Photoshop, but I'm not remotely interested in that. I find that what happens in real life is always better always than what I might come up with in my imagination or generate in Photoshop or, God forbid, AI. So those are real. All the photographs are real moments.
And what do you hope to achieve with this body of work?
Just that I am a small cog in an incremental wheel of change, gradually building an enlightenment, an awareness, a greater dialogue for people to comprehend what is happening around the entire planet, that you might be sitting just fine in an Western Europe urban setting, not really feeling the consequences as much as others, but this impacts, you know, the human race in a way that nothing else ever has, and this is just the beginning. And that it is better, I you know, people ask me, well, have you given up hope? And I say, no, I would not be taking these photographs if I felt there was no hope. What we can do, what we can all do, is mitigate the damage through any number of small actions that that accumulate through billions of small actions into potentially consequential change. And whether that is just simply buying organic produce so that you're not buying food that's been sprayed with pesticides that is contributing to an insect apocalypse, or whether you refuse to buy any more food that's in one-use plastic that ends up in the oceans, that ends up in the stomachs of animal, you know, marine mammals, killing them,
or birds, whether you mammals, end up, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Everything. I could, you know, obviously I could go on and on and on with a list of things.
So you
go
believe on. That everybody can do something and all little totally. Actions will
yes,
be accumulative.
Completely. And I'm going to give you the most kind of one small girl in Stockholm with zero influence, sitting alone on a street with a placard, her name.
You're talking about Greta.
Greta Thunberg, yep. And within a short space of time, inspiring millions of kids all around the world. Now, that is obviously a big example. But everybody in their own way can just do something. Just, you know, not eating factory farmed animals. Just, you know, the list goes, like I said, the list can go on and on and on.
So I urge everybody to go to your exhibition to experience this and see what they think. How has it been received so far? Because it's been running for a couple of months now. What feedback have you had?
I've been told by the gallery that they have, everybody that has been incredibly moved, which is the most important thing for me. But I'm not there to actually, you know, witness it. You know, for those people who do live close by, yes, please go. Don't just look at on your phone. Thank you.
Please go to Petworth.
Please. The Petworth exhibition really is quite special because of the scale. It's 64 large prints. Because it's all three chapters, like I said, the first place in the world to show that. I mean, Seoul in Korea will be showing the same body of work next month, but they'll be second. So Petworth is the first.
And are you going to Seoul in Korea? Have you ever been?
No, I'm actually, I want to dive into the new body of work.
Okay, so tell me about your new body
Jordan.
Of work.
All I want to say right now is that it's very different. Again, it's photographed in Jordan, which is supposed to be the second most water-scarce country on the planet. And so I've photographed people who have been impacted by the effects of climate change there, but it's a very different style and body of work, and that'll be released in September.
Because we're running out of time here, because we could talk for a very long time. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got into photography, and why this? Because it's a pretty huge subject, so yeah, you have to be driven to do this.
Yes, and I have always been obsessed with environmental injustice. Well, injustice anyway, but environmental injustice initially. And felt that photography was, for me personally, the best medium to express my feelings about what I am witnessing. So I became a photographer in 2001.
What were you before that?
I was a director, but I...
So why not film?
because I was intensely frustrated that I could not express what I felt in film. The beauty of photography is that in theory, you can create what you want, when you want, how you want, without waiting for somebody to give you money to create. And so there are the majority of people I know working in film are pretty miserable because they're living for tomorrow. They're not able to express themselves, which is their fundamental, you know, reason for being a creator. Mm-hmm. They're not able to express themselves without being given money. And the moment that I switched careers to photography, I was liberated. And it was the best decision I've ever made. So there you go.
And are you ever tempted to make little films? And how do you feel about social media? Because, you know, again, you'd be minimizing what you actually... You know, you want people to see it in print, and yet you have to use social media to get your message out there.
I mean, social media, I despise it. I find it a necessary evil. It fundamentally diminishes, as I've mentioned, seeing the work. I feel incredibly sorry for painters and sculptors, where you really even more need to see the texture, the three-dimensionality. So exhibitions are incredibly important. I long for a day when phones just return to being phones, not something that you can view visual work on. That's me with my middle-aged rant.
Luddite, it's not going to happen. Rant.
I know it's not. I know. There was a day like a couple of years ago, Instagram and Facebook went down for half a day, and I was so happy. It was just joy.
Now you've got TikTok to deal with, so
you know. I know. But you asked me, there was another part to that question that I've forgotten now. What was it?
Making films. Would you make films? Documentation.
Oh, yeah. So for me, the greatest art form is music, in its ability, in its universal ability to just, again, I keep coming back to this verb, move people. And the combination of film, motion, image in motion, and music, there's nothing like it. And that's why I took this massive, I regret, detour, years-long detour into directing. So it is very tempting to go back to something where you can utilize the glory of music for further emotional impact. But my uncompromising nature is such that I am my own, totally my own, you know, creator.
Worst enemy.
And, well, aren't we all?
Yes, we are.
Aren't we all our own worst enemy?
Yeah.
But I think just generally, behaviorally, I mean, if we want to get into a therapist session here, I mean, I think...
Let's not do that. It could take a long time. Go on.
But I think we're all... No, I'm just saying, I think we're all our own worst enemy in some degree
we are.
Or other.
I hope it speaks to people in the way that you want it to. I think it has so many messages. And the thing is, it stops you and you start thinking about what you're looking at. So I hope people go and see the work, and I wish you all the best with it and your next body of work and your exhibition in Seoul.
Thank you, Noni. I really appreciate you giving me this platform just to, you know, hopefully a few more people go to the exhibition and are moved by it.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much.
That was Nick Brandt talking to me, Noni Needs, about his current exhibition at the Newlands House Gallery in Petworth, a series of portraits symbolising the devastating effects of climate change called The Day May Break and Sink Rise.
This is Shine Radio, made in Petersfield by
Andy,
Kirsty,
Amy,
Dougie,
and you.
To join us, email team@shineradio.uk or call or WhatsApp us on 01730 555 500.
Join our team and make it shine at the radio station made by you.
You make it shine. Shine Radio.